this voting for Trump was way less about the political divide on policy issues. It was more so like just Trump came into the living room and then like snatched up the parents and took them away.
What's up, everybody? Joshua Thomas Gray here with another podcast of We Are Human. Today, hanging out with Sarah. Is that what people call you? I noticed you have like three different names that people call you.
People call me Rye.
Rye. Is that what friends call you?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Friends call me Sarah.
You're like, just my parents. Nobody else.
They won't change. My mom has said, I will always call you Sarah. And I was like, not very woke, Mom, but okay.
That's awesome. Yeah, and today we're going to try to quickly, because you only have 40 minutes, talk through like, you know, just some massive topics of evangelical Christianity, growing up in the church as a pastor's kid. I went to the same, your dad's church, and like, then like the political climate of the United States and our president and some of the things that you started talking about recently. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is some stuff I've been thinking about a lot and having a lot of conversations with like other people my age, but also talking with my parents a lot. And I think a lot of people our age who grew up in the evangelical church and were like, I was super involved. You were a pastor's kid. So inevitably, like, it's very tight knitted. And just having like this conversation, because as you've been experiencing, you're seeing all these people reaching out to you that you're like, I haven't even talked to this person in forever. Well, including like you and I, it's like, it's not like we talk and hang out or something, but it was just like, wow, that like so resonates with where I'm at and what I'm feeling. Like, it would be good, I think, to have a conversation and like just get the conversation out there and going. So, but first, let's get like a little bit about who you are and what life is like.
So yeah, pastor's kid. Like, you know, I had my Linden experience. I don't know when you, if you like were raised in Linden, but I moved to Linden like my eighth grade year.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, that's when dad had started the church. And so I moved for that. And yeah, I liked Linden. I came from Ferndale. So it, like, you know, Linden has a reputation, but more or less, like, it, what it does have is a really strong identity. And even though I wasn't Dutch and like I wasn't a part of a Reformed church, like those are two, like being on the outside of things, it, like, Christ the King and CCTK was like a big presence, and it was a community there, and in a small town, and it, like, I really did have a super positive experience. Yeah. I was a waitress at the local diner, you know, at Fairway Cafe, and I learned a lot, you know, like I was able to buy my first car. I worked at the Woods coffee shop, you know, it's like, and you knew people and you felt known. And it wasn't just like your church community wasn't just who you saw on Sunday, because like, yeah, like we went to high school together. We were in youth ministry. Like we, people would come into the coffee shop and they'd hang out there. So it was just like, we saw each other all the time everywhere. And that was nice. And then I left for Bible College with New Hope Christian Fellowship. And I went there, and like New Hope with Pastor Wayne Cordero, like that's at the time was a 16,000 plus mega church. So it was like a huge deal. And being part of the ministry there and working more on like the young adult college age ministries, and that really shaped my life, and meeting friends there. And again, it was like, it's not just you go to church. It's like, I was in Bible College, and then like part of Bible College, you have to work in ministry, and then you have to attend Sunday. And then I lived with girls that I went to school with. I met, you know, met someone who was in the youth group ministry, which is like the only way to have the sanctioned love, you know? So it's like all of your life is that, aside from like, you know, working restaurant and coffee jobs on the side, which I think honestly was like a tether now that I think about it. And then did Youth with a Mission, you know, at 19, did that for a year, traveled more evangelicalism, still super positive experience. I loved my YWAM time. I had been exposed to YWAM for a pretty good amount of time, and so I knew a lot about it. I was maybe more nuanced and critical of it entirely. It wasn't like just a diehard. And that was like kind of what phased me more towards finally getting my master's in theology back at Regent at University of British Columbia, like going kind of back home and studying there, because I realized I had questions and I was becoming a critical thinker. And thankfully, like, my parents were good. And I think having my older sister, Liza, too, go through her phase, because about this point, she had really decided to leave the evangelical faith. Like, and that was hard because she was in youth with a mission and she was a missionary, and that was like her life, and it had been her life for 5 to 7 years. And she was really starting, she just got to a point with the evangelical church that they didn't feel like they were actually representing justice, and they weren't actually taking care of immigrants, and they weren't protecting rights, and they weren't voting in policies that made a difference. And so she really pivoted and stopped relying on the church and the mission field to provide that for people, and went more poli-sci and got active in immigrant rights. And so seeing her do that and seeing that there were other ways that you could care about people made me want to go do my theology degree and like, really start asking good questions, because I just, like, I wasn't, for better, like, I don't know how I got lucky, but I studied theology because I liked asking questions, not because I wanted to know the answer to all of them. I just, like, one question is just going to lead to a bigger one and another one and a deeper one and, like, so on. And I just, that sounded cool to me because it was inexhaustible. I'm like, there will always be something to question about faith. So, like, let's get to it. And then I moved to Nebraska in 2016. I was writing my thesis on human interaction with technology and if it's good or evil or not either of those things. And that was interesting. And then I, like, started hearing, like, there were these evangelical pastors coming in to the coffee shop to plant a church right across the street. And they were, like, getting to know the community and holding their, you know, meetings or staff meetings in the center table as they do. And I was like, what is it about these freaking evangelical pastors and their tight pants and their cool jackets and their cappuccinos, and they just think that they could set up shop and, like, the coffee shop is here to serve them. And I'm just a little bit triggered as a pastor's kid. I'm like, this is not your space. We like, it feels sometimes like Christians are, like, incognito in coffee shops. Like, I know that most of them are run by Christians and evangelicals, and it's like, ooh, it's their, like, sneaky way of doing ministry. And I, like, tell my secular friends, like, what's going on? Like, you don't know it, but you're being brainwashed by the pseudo-Christian music. And, like,
oh my gosh, that's so funny. It's funny because it's so true. It's actually strategic, like, planning. That's kind of just, it just kind of happens. But because it's happening, it's like, we should lean into this.
Yeah, it's, you know, yeah, it's our safe community development. I, like, when secular friends ask me, I'm like, well, we're not going to open a bar. Like, that's too controversial. We can't do that. So, like, coffee is just, like, really safe in the world, but not of the world, which, like, I mean, right, and I love coffee shops because I think it does make me feel very at home, and I get it. I'm like, I get people. I'm good at people. Like, I care about them. I'm, like, I'm a greeter. You know, I'm a small group leader. Like, all of these skills that I had growing up and I've developed, I honestly, like, get to manifest and work out at a coffee shop. So it's like, I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so these pastors, it's 2016. It's like August, September, October, November, and then when Trump got elected and the data started coming out that it was, like, my people, these pastors, my church family, Linden community, who voted for Trump, after just feeling maybe a bit naive because I was like, oh, I'm, like, a fresh grad student who studied theology. Like, you know, I'm already a bit bummed because I'm a woman and I know that, like, there's these pastors sitting at this coffee shop that haven't, none of them have formal degrees in theology, and they'll never hire me. So that feels pretty bad.
Yeah.
So that's already, like, I'm already having issues with that because I'm realizing, like, I got a degree and I have, you know, $30,000 in debt, and I essentially can't get a job. Like, I'm a leader, I'm a speaker, but I'm a woman. So, like, even my own faith background won't hire me and won't validate me in my own experience. Meanwhile, they'll like find a businessman in the church who runs a construction company who's like kind of just turned his life around and has a family of three. And they'll be like, you know what? I think you've got leadership potential. Let's make you a pastor. And that, you know, I think that might have just been enough for me. But then when they nominated Trump, I was like, well, then now you just don't even think. So now we're really done. I'm personally offended, and now I'm just offended on a whole other level, like aside from just my gender. How you've just like taken what I know to be true from all of my experience and all my study, and then you've just like just tossed it out. And I, like, because it happened, it's like you, I just spent, you know, the last 4 years trying to figure out what was going on and how they got to do that. And so it's like, then I like switched my thesis entirely, and I was like, I don't want to hate people, and I don't want to hate the community I came from, and I don't want to hate my friends and family, but I have so much anger, bitterness, grief in my heart, like along with Liza. Like, we were up at, you know, when Trump got elected, it was like midnight, 1-2 in the morning for me. I was at my gay neighbor's house, sitting on the couch, getting toast wasted, and just like so sad. And they're just sitting there like, what if we can't ever get married? And I was just like bawling, and I was like, how did everything turn out so awful? And then like spending the next 3 months like emotionally hungover, because I just couldn't believe that my people did it. And here I was like, my people hurt my friends across the street. They don't even know them. They don't know how beautiful the relationship is. They have no right to interfere with it. And so Liza and I just kind of like sat in this daze, and I remember like February texting her and being like, I'm just not used to like carrying the emotional burden of politics and of the well-being of my government. Like, as millennials, as like our age group, aside from 9/11, and like we were kind of too young and with the Iraq war, and like we didn't really have much to do with Bush, and like we just like didn't really have the political grief experience that other generations had. And this kind of felt like the first wave for me. I'm like, oh, this is the first time that I'm actually really concerned and frustrated with what my government is doing. And on top of it, it's my people who have supported it. So like, what do I even do with that? And I honestly just kind of had to like go away for a while.
Yeah. There's just nothing nice for you to say. So you're just like, I just need to leave.
Yeah.
What does, okay, but like with that said, like a lot of them think the total opposite of what you're thinking. They grieved because we had like Obama as a president, and he was the worst thing that's ever happened to America. And then Trump was the, and still is, still, despite his rhetoric, despite how he treats people, despite all of the things, the culture that he's creating, despite that, he still is a better option. And I think a lot of people finally are to the point of like, we don't have good options on both sides. I think both sides are finally to the point where they'll both admit, like, we don't have awesome options. But they still full-heartedly believe the opposite of what you're saying. And they're good people. Like, I like these people, and they think that what would be best is more of what we've had the last 4 years. And like all the feelings that you had when he got elected is like, if he loses this election, is what, how you feel is how they're going to feel. But we kind of want the same thing. So I'm super confused how that's happening. Like, how are you experiencing such a different thing? And being very specific in evangelical Christian culture, where it's like this bubble that we know and the people we grew up knowing and the church that we grew up in, like knowing all of that, it's like, how come you feel that strongly about it while the other people feel so strongly in the opposite way that you do? And how do we have a conversation? Like, what did this going away help you process?
It was, so being in Nebraska during like from 2016 to like last year, you know, it's like everyone I met my age was raised in the church. Like, yeah. You know, they all just like, it's, you know, conservative, red, like, Christian communities, and they all like, whether it was evangelical or not, they like were very familiar with just like being like growing up in the church and having their parents have some sort of faith. And then voting for Trump and then feeling like, okay, I was used to being like on the progressive, more like left leaning side of things. But as time and time again, I just heard like, this time I'm one hurt by my parents, like bypassing the character and values of the Christian faith that I actually still believe in and that they taught me and that I'm pretty sure that we agree on. So it's like, I get that they like, think differently about abortion than I do. I get that they think differently about gay rights. I get that they even think differently about immigration rights, but I don't understand like what about like loving and honesty and kindness and generosity, what like those things, like those, like that kept us together. And in my adultness, as I grew up too, I felt like I was even more proud of them for those things that they taught me. And I like, I'm honing in on it and I'm starting to learn more and like appreciate that wisdom. So this voting for Trump was way less about the political divide on policy issues. It was more so like just Trump came into the living room and then like snatched up the parents and took them away. And you're like, wait, what happened to my parents? I'm just starting to get to know them. I need them now. I'm having kids. I'm getting married. Like I'm trying to buy a house. Like all of a sudden you've took this like source of wisdom and strength or like, you know, other older Christian loved ones. Like I'm just learning to lean on them in a new way to help me like, you know, get through my adult life. And then all of a sudden I can't even engage with them because I feel like the basic values of who I am and how we're supposed to live as humans is like, we don't agree on and they won't engage me in it. And I think it's been easy for us to like get caught up in the divide of like, it's about these policy issues. But like, once we do that, they, both sides just sink in deeper.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like none of us is getting anywhere. I'm not going to change my auntie's mind about abortion. Like, it just not. And I honestly, I don't have the energy and I don't want to engage her on it. That's like not really what I want to talk about. What I would like to tell her is that, like, I'm hurt that that you voting for Trump has made you seem really mean. And it feels like it's unsafe to like talk to you about things. And it feels like the topic of conversation that you really hold on to and then you're not willing to engage in other conversations. And that's why it's been this angle of like, it's not really about policy. Like it's good. And I think we can talk about that. But before we even try to talk about our differences in policy and politics, I just want you to know that I'm feeling really hurt and I really miss you. And I'm so confused. Like I felt like you loved me really genuinely and really sincerely. And now I'm having a hard time loving you. And I've been kind of keeping that to myself for the last few years because you voted for Trump and I didn't know what to do. But I'm worried that if I keep it to myself, like we actually won't have a relationship anymore. It will just, it's gotten to a point where it's like, well, I don't really have to have them in my life. They don't provide for me. They don't, you know, pay for me. So the only reason I have a relationship with you is because I want to. And if this has become such a big thing in our lives, then like, there's just no relationship there anymore. And I think saying that and coming to that realization, especially like it was for me, it was like, there's no reason for me to go back to Linden and I don't feel love there, which is so sad because I felt so much love there and I felt so supported. And so I either am going to choose that this is just like a write-off place in my life, or I'm going to like actually do some work and see if there's some relationship there that like can be solved and be meaningful, whether I agree with these people or not. Like I, like when Sean reached out, are you pastor? I was like, heck yeah, I'll come up to London and hang and have dinner with you and Shiloh. Like I felt so encouraged and so safe immediately, even though like, yeah, like you said, like we're like with Sean, it's like, yeah, we're not totally the same. But just him being willing to reach out and be like, I'm really proud of you. I like what you're saying. These are my thoughts. Like next time you're up, come up. And I was like, that was just like a little spark of like, see, now like Linden means something to me again. There's people there for me. And I still have a community.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like the same thing I was saying about like your dad stepping out and saying something, where it's like, and we were mentioning Sean also being, and I just hung out with Sean like a week or two ago. I was in Washington. We hung out and it was friggin' awesome. And it's like in his cigar lounge, just sitting there. I don't smoke or anything. He's the smoking, drinking guy. And it's like, he's the pastor. And it's like, and it's, he's just down to just love on people. And it's like, I don't even, we didn't talk about politics or, I don't know where he stands on any of that. I don't even care. It doesn't matter. We talked about how, like, he's doing, how I'm doing, like, how our souls are doing, and, like, what does that mean? And, like, we're just talking about life. And he's just always been that, even as a young person. I mean, he was a life-changing person in my life. Like, I am who I am today. I think like I do today, largely in part of his investment in my life, growing up as a tween and a teenager. And, like, yeah, so like that was a huge part. But then also like your dad is also that to me. It's like this glimmer of light of, it's hard to put it into words, because it's like, it's, it, I don't want to just be like also spewing hate on people because of what they believe in things, but it's also very hard when they're being so hateful and like not even regarding it or thinking about it or caring about it. And I don't need to have anyone believe the same things I believe. Actually, the opposite. I gravitate towards all different types of people. Like, I've always just hung out with a lot of different people. And even growing up, like in Linden and like in the church, like I didn't stay in like some clique church group or anything. Like, I hung out with all different types of people. I always have gotten along with people, and I like hearing about other people's ideas and how they live and their life experience. I've just always kind of been that way. And so, but then it's like just seeing so much of like the culture that Trump has created and Lyndon kind of just falling in suit of the stereotypical, like, so status quo, so stereotypical, so just like a movie, that it's really discouraging and sad when I'm like, these people are awesome. I love them so much. And yet, like, they won't engage in a conversation that's that helpful. Not that I'm like super great at it either. I'm trying to figure it all out too. And it's like, how do you navigate this, and how do you like extend an openness to, so that like, because that's really sad to hear you be like, well, maybe Lyndon will just be like a nothing. And it's like, oh, like, I hope not. I hope like that isn't the case. And it's like, but I also know that there has to be some people like your dad and like Sean and like we need more though of these older leaders in Linden, because they're the only two I can name. I don't know anybody else. And it's like, we need more of them to just be like, all right, like, we need to stop feeding into this monstrosity that's division and hurt. And in the very basics of it, like you said, we don't need to get into like policies. We don't need to get into any of those. We're talking like, how's your family? Like, when's the last time like you talk to your kids? And like, but just on like a normal conversation where both, or like, I think a lot of people, thankfully, like, I have had lots of conversations with my parents, and like, we don't agree on the same things, but we openly talk and have long form discussions, and it's great. I want to understand so deeply where they're coming from, because I understand there is this generational difference. Like I'm not afraid of America becoming communist or Marxism or these things that were very realistic that could have happened, like, and that they went through, that's like deeply ingrained in recent history. And I'm not disregarding like that is impossible or something, and we're immune to it. But it's just like, that is not top of mind to me. I don't think of China and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're like the worst thing that's ever happened. And like, but I want to understand how, and it makes sense if you just look at our pretty recent history and how they grew up. And then more specifically, evangelical Christianity and how it's on a decline. Like our parents' culture is on a decline. It's dying. And unfortunately, it feels like this is kind of a last ditch effort, as opposed to just like pumping the brakes and like listening to the younger generation and being like, oh, okay, like we see and hear what you're saying. Instead, it kind of feels like they just like cranked it to 1,000 and they're just like, we're just gonna try to power through this and survive. And it's just, it's totally gonna destroy the thing that like raised me and like gave me my morals and gave me my identity and like helped foster me into like a functioning person in society. And it's super sad. And I'm like, no, we don't want you to die and to go away and to like just go into your corner and try to like limp your way through this. Like, we want to be a part of your lives. We want to be a part of the like what this looks like moving forward. But it also should be like, take a clue that no young people want to be associated with you. So like, just don't get too hurt about it, because they're also hurt. Like what you were talking about, both sides are hurt. One of them though is dying. So I think the younger generation really needs to like, both ways, they're physically dying because they're old, and two, like their actual culture is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And now on top of that, like, they're also getting made fun of. They're getting labeled as stupid and all of this. Evangelical Christians were the smart, savvy business, like pioneers. Like, it was in the heyday. It was legit. They were like very progressive. They were really in America. Like, it's old, but like in America, like the what we see as evangelical Christianity, like that whole wave. So it's easy, if you think about it, to see like where they're coming from. But where I'm still like not having much success is figuring out, how do we bridge the gap to like get them to acknowledge that they don't know everything? But it's crazy, because I'm not trying to come at it like I know everything. I'm just saying, hey, I don't know everything. But then it still feels like you get faced with a wall, but then again, I'm like, well, I understand. Like, you're trying to like save your culture, which is a big deal. I couldn't imagine what that would like. I feel like we're in a generation where we're creating a culture right now. That's super exciting. So I don't think we're going to live through the death of the culture that we're creating. We're kind of right in the middle of, so we get to live through a really exciting time of like birthing a culture. And that would suck so bad to be on the tail end of a culture as it's like dwindling out and dying. But it's also like, man, so much of the foundation of that culture would be rooted in like passing the baton on in a healthy way, like being good steward, like everything. And it's like, they're doing it. It feels like the opposite. And the more young people I talk to who grew up in that situation, like, we all feel that way. So it's not like it's just me, and it's not like it's just you. And that's where it's getting me to want to try even more of like, how do we have conversations with our parents and other people that we have in our lives that fall in that category? Like, how do we bridge that gap?
Well, you think, so if it's white middle-class evangelicals that nominated Trump into office in 2016 and are like a big support, evangelical baby boomers are big support now, you take that population and you multiply it by, you know, 2 to 3 kids on average, we're a bigger force. Right. And there's a lot of us who feel like, and I do feel like it's predominantly or like a majority of us that do feel like the church, the evangelical church, doesn't look like me. It doesn't reflect the values and beliefs that I have. It doesn't love people that I love the way that I think they deserve to be loved. And they're not engaged in social issues that are really important to me. So then like, I don't go to church because I don't understand what the value is of like a 10 o'clock physical service right now for an hour. Like, we just don't really think that way anymore. It's not relevant to us. Like, I mean, for both of us, we like spent hours and hours at a church, you know, doing church service. And like, you know, that was critical. Organizing church services and being in that space was like, you know, what we did. And so to think now that like, oh, just physical meetings like that, like we can achieve our objective in so many different ways. So that's what I do think that like, and even to your point of like, they are the elderly generation. They're the ones that are like getting sicker. And it was hard, honestly. My dad had heart problems this summer and it slowed him down. And you probably remember, like, he's a pretty passionate, energetic, high functioning guy. And so he was always going and going and going, riding his bike, going kayaking, golfing, just like couldn't stop him. And he, like, with the heart condition, like, it did slow him down. And it started off with Liza and I, like, we wanted to do this. But then when my dad, like, shared more about Trump, it got to be so much more of, like, this, it doesn't matter what happens. What matters is, like, we got to spend this time talking to our dad and, like, developing a relationship with him in a way that, honestly, as, like, a pastor's kid, we didn't get to have. And even just this like past August, Eliza was visiting and we had gone crabbing and we were talking about politics probably a bit. And then he just asked us, and we didn't really know where it came from, but he's just like, is there anything that I can apologize for? Like, is there anything as a kid, that like you're still hurt about? And we talked a little bit about the purity movement and some of the dating rules. We didn't feel like those were super cool. but then he stopped and he's like, there's one thing I do want to apologize. And he's like, if I could do everything over again, I would have spent more time being your dad and less time being a pastor. And I was just like, Liza, I looked at it and we're just like, holy shit, what? That is who you are to us. And like, we would have loved for you to say that to us before, because we did feel like we were just sheep in his flock and members of the congregation. And like, we were raised like how everybody, like, you know, like you got my dad the way that I got my dad, you know? And so this, like, for us, it's just been weird that politics has just been like a bonding thing for us to get to these other things of like, I don't care. I get to have my dad in a way I never got to have my dad. And I actually get to work on something with my dad. And we like, I'm getting this wisdom from, and then even like, so totally out of left field a little bit, my mom's coming in with some hot wisdom and just been like, let's talk about gay people. And I'm like, what? No. She's like, I want in on it. She literally joined the Zoom call and her hair was wet. She's going to kill me saying this. Our first video for New Mom Majority. She's like, I just wanted to be a part of it. And I was like, well, Mom, you're on the video, so you're going to be recorded. She's like, my hair's wet. I said it's done.
That's awesome.
Like, well, Mom, you got a voice. And so you're going to share. And it's like, even that has been so meaningful because like, she was a pastor's wife. She wasn't a pastor, but in the last like 5 to 10 years, she started like communicating like as like being in ministry and like owning her own role and owning her own leadership role. And so I don't know, I think that got on a tangent, but I do think that it's on us as the like millennial generation, and because there's more of us and because we're more confused and we're more like, we have this longing of like, we see our parents and we're like, we're trying to partner up, we're trying to have kids, we're trying to do these things because we realize our parents are only going to be in our lives for a decade or two more probably. And we want to get everything we can out of them. And so Trump has just felt like this is like machete in the middle of it. It's just like, nope, you don't get them. And you're just like, no. Like, I want them. I love them. It's like, especially if we're lucky enough to have a relationship. And even if we're not, we want just a little bit of it. Like, we would love to maybe just repair some of it. And so we got to do it. We got to go back and we got to say that, like, no, you matter to us and we love you and we choose you and we choose a relationship with you. But this, if I'm being really honest, like, Trump and, you know, you aligning yourself with someone who doesn't represent Christianity or the faith, like you taught me, is super confusing, and it's really hurtful. And that is big enough that it would ruin this relationship potential, this friendship that we could potentially have with each other. And that makes me sad. And so, like, it's so meaningful to me that I'm going to risk bringing it up. And I would even be open to having some, like, really painfully awkward conversations with you over the dinner table and over the holidays. And even, like, being able to disagree with you if it meant that, like, we were still talking and our relationship had value.
Right.
But, yeah. That's all. We're just getting, it's so funny. Like, they're getting so sentimental. My dad is, like, he always cried, but he's like so soft now and like sweet and tender, and my mom too. And, you know, so it, you know, they just like, they want, and that's what Liza and I felt like. It's like, we're the only people who can reach this generation about evangelicalism and about politics and kind of like how confusing and what's going on. And we're finally old enough that I think that we trust ourselves to, like, we don't know everything, but we're getting to be more confident that we know how to ask questions. We do the reflective processing. Like, we've made tough choices. We've found partners that we've thought about really hard. We've, like, made careers for ourselves that took a lot of time and energy, and we've been through painful things. So it's like, we trust ourselves more to be like, no, guys, like, you're actually, this isn't right, and this is kind of wrong and messed up, and like, we need to talk about it. Like, before, we were too young, we didn't have that voice and that, like respect with our parents and that confidence. And I think this, like I kind of said at the beginning, when we're chatting, is like, the faith is like the last thing that I haven't really owned in my life, and I haven't like become a grown up in. I'm still like locked in this childhood faith / like the faith that I studied. But as far as like, you know, adult 31-year-old Rye, like, what does my faith look like? I'm like, oh, that's, I don't know. I'm going to need a different therapist for that. Like, I haven't gone there very well. Like, it's just the last thing that I really feel like kind of convicted, to use good religious language, that I have just like not spent like, and then that feels like exactly the same thing that the older generation is doing. Like, they're just assuming republicanism, they're just assuming what they were raised with, they're like holding on to their perceived notions of what evangelicalism. Meanwhile, I'm just choosing not to engage. So both parties are just choosing not to engage or think about it in a way that's like helpful. And so it's like, we're actually, we both have to do the same thing. We both have to like lay what we think down, say like, I'm going to engage with this, and like, let's create a safe space together to do it. Because I haven't done any, like, I just left and I haven't been in church for 5 years. Like, trust me, you still go to church. So like, that's nice. And like, but you did this thing that's super messed up. So like, we need to somehow like come back, because we're both on too far ends. And I don't think either, I don't know, like, either really need some reflection. You cannot go to church if you can't go to church, and as long as you've thought about it.
Right.
And then being willing to, like, just have a conversation, which is an awkward conversation, like you said. Like, it's just not a fun, it's to the point where it's just not a delightful conversation for, And wait, but how did your dad and mom like come to being like, nope, not about Trump? Because that, they are funded and work exclusively, right? Pretty much through evangelical. I mean, your dad makes money because he is business savvy too and does stuff, so he can easily fall back on his own merit, and that's wisdom that he taught when I was a teenager. So now he can step out and say, he can be like, you're wrong, and not have to fear the like, oh, they're going to take all my funding away for this. But at the same time, like, a lot of support is on the line for your dad. So how did, like, what, to me, that's like, oh, that's like the Holy Spirit. That's like God working in somebody, challenging them to think outside of their culture, outside of their peers, outside of everything that's happening, and just saying like, oh, guess what? You need to go the opposite direction for a minute, because I'm going to show you some things. because there's no other reason for someone like your dad to start sitting down and being like, I wonder, as everything's going so perfectly for evangelicals and they're winning everything that they want, maybe I should challenge all of these and challenge everybody in my life that, and like, so
what was that?
All of this. Yeah.
And potentially lose them.
Yeah. And he has, and it's been really sad to see. And I think that's the other nice thing for them is bonding with like Liza and my siblings and stuff. Like, we're his friends now.
Yeah. Isn't that cool, being friends with your parents?
It's just like, we like now we hang because like, yeah, they lost some of their, not lost, but they just didn't feel understood, or like it didn't feel safe for them either, you know? And so they're like, can we come hang out with you? You know, you're like, yeah, for sure. Like, I get it.
You're like, welcome, come.
Honestly, my mom shared this on her last video about racism, and it was such a keen insight that because they'd spent so much of like the last 10 years traveling and doing missions in Cambodia and India and in the Middle East, and they experienced evangelicalism outside of American white culture, and they taught that, and they really taught this like very socially oriented faith. And they came to really value that side of it and really just prioritize it a lot of, you know, this is about caring for humans. It's about, you know, creating strong community. It's, you know, it's about lifting people out of poverty. It's about giving them opportunities and entrepreneurial opportunities so that they can provide for their family. And good teaching to build deep relationships and critical thinking and all those aspects. And so I think it had been this really strong influence of them experiencing evangelicalism in the church around the world and outside of American culture that made them so confused seeing what was happening with American evangelicalism. Like, we kind of have stopped, we haven't been in this for a while and we don't really identify with it anymore. Like, every time they would come back from their mission trips, like India and Cambodia, they were just like on fire. They loved it. And like, my dad used to like group in Nigeria a lot for 6 years he did that. And he would just like, he'd come back and he'd be like, I just love that everyone claps and sings and is engaged and like, it participates, you know. It's just like that, like, kept his faith alive for both of them. Seeing Christ and seeing faith and seeing church be really meaningful in people's lives, opposed to like, then he would come back and he would just go on these rants on Sundays. He'd be, you know, driving down the road and telling with us later about like, he's like, I saw this mom and a dad in a minivan and like four kids, and they're just like fussing to try to get the kids out of the car and into the house or out into the church. And when I was driving by, I just thought like, what's the point, God? Like, is it really worth it to them? Like, all the hassle they got to do to get these kids dressed, get them out, get them into the church, only to sit in this seat, to just, like, kind of hear something, to sing a few songs, have an hour, wrap it up, come back. Like, is that really faith? Is that really meaningful? Like, what is it producing in their lives, and how are they living their faith out in the world? Which is crazy epiphany from a guy who's, had ministry for 35 years doing that, getting people to come to service and believing in it. And he does believe in it a ton. It was just like, he got to a point where he was willing to say like, I have to the Holy Spirit as I could be in my life. And I can only be responsible to what I feel like the Holy Spirit is teaching me right now. And he was okay saying like, I felt like I listened in love, and I listened honestly and righteously, and I created a church I felt like God wanted me to create, and I was also willing to reshape it and to step away from it and to see church and like move with context. You know, like, our faith should constantly be changing, and I think that's a message we have to tell our parents right now. It's like, my life and the context of my life, ours, like, well, how we live and the economic disparity that we kind of face in our like freelance gig works and, you know, like, can't buy a home and live in a tiny space. And it's like, our faith is responding to that as much as their faith responded to their like baby boomer and their post-war life and like growing up as kids in the Depression era. Like, it's for them to think that our faith is going to look like theirs and they should hold us to that is doesn't make sense and is unreasonable. And I think kind of Trump has kind of highlighted those some things too. And I think my dad was just willing to keep, and my mom to continue that contextualization of their faith and what's going on. And it's because, you know, immigration and it taking care of the poor were so important to them and what they were doing right now. It just like, it was the thing that set them off against Trump so immediately. They're like, no, like I can't do that. And yeah, so because I couldn't possibly say, and I wouldn't agree that like people who vote for Trump don't have a sincere relationship with the Lord. Like I don't think that. So I can't say that like, oh, like dad's just hearing right. I'm grateful for his voice, but I think there was a willingness to see it and like an acuteness for it that maybe other people don't have right now or aren't willing to engage with or don't find as relevant to their lives. And so they just haven't leaned into it and they haven't bothered asking a question. It certainly would have been more convenient, easy for them to agree with Trump and to vote Republican. It's been excruciating for them to like figure out being like, if they want to be a Democrat, which they aren't, they're still Republicans. They're just like, but we'll vote for Biden.
I can't believe how crazy that idea though is. I think maybe our generation will be a lot different than the older generations, but like, I think a lot more of us are like, why would I am not a Democrat and I am not a Republican. What? That's even crazier to me than people who identify like as a religious group, where it's like, I am that thing and the denomination of that thing. I think being a Republican or a Democrat, like literally you just go through the ballot. If it's got an R next to it, you just wipe it. You don't even look at it. It's because you are that. I think that's crazy. And I think our generation is going to be way more down to, and I think it's also just because the Republican and Democrat Party over the last couple decades has kind of just grown really extreme on their two sides. It wasn't always like that. Democrats had more conservative people in the party and Republicans had more progressive people in their party. It was way more balanced and it just is getting more and more and more and more like, and then Trump really helped like make it a very hard divide to where a lot of Republicans are just like, this doesn't really represent Republican.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of, it's, but that's the thing with these parties. They are ever changing. They don't look anything like they did not that long ago. So this might be the new way the Republican Party looks. I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. And even with Biden, like Democrats, that'll look different. You know, it's just like,
totally.
It's all like, who knows how things are going to pan out.
But like the idea where like that it's crazy that somebody who would traditionally vote Republican votes Democrat. The fact that that's crazy, I think is not a good, just now if we're talking like as Americans, like that's just not good, we live in a democracy. We can vote for whoever we want. You don't have to vote for a Republican or a Democrat. Like one, we really should be focusing on how the heck do we get somebody who we actually want in. Yeah. The fact that it's basically statistically impossible to elect a president who isn't a Democrat or Republican should make Americans kind of angry at these two political parties who are overreaching and like putting themselves in a position where literally they're the only ones. It's one or the other. No one else has a chance, which is how you get like a Donald Trump as a Republican. And it's just like, that's their own doing of how they've set themselves up, how they put policies into place where they're allowed to raise way more money than independent people can. And like they do that together too. So it's like all these crazy things that I think our generation is going to be very okay to be like, neither of you.
Yeah. I think like I had a journalist ask me like, what do you want out of this? And I was like, honestly, I want to either throw out or redefine evangelicalism. Like, we either decide we don't need the term anymore because it doesn't serve us, or we do some serious work redefining it and deconstructing it to a point where, like, I can be proud to, like, to use the term again, and maybe just, like, throw away the way that we, like, the electoral college and how we vote, and, like, maybe some ranked choice voting. Like, if our generation could do those two things, like, if my community could help do that, I would be like, done. I'm so proud. I did 30 years. You know, like, that's where we're at right now. It's not about, like, oh, I just want to see a Democrat and these policies and, like, these things. Right. Like, I just want voting to be more fair and to be more equally represented. And I wanted to, like, have more, yeah, have an actual opportunity to maybe nominate Elizabeth Warren, I don't know, or, like, something else. Not to 70-year-old white guys. Like, I just, that would make me proud. And I want to, like, be able to redefine a faith that I came in, that I grew up with, that was good to me. And then, and if it, like, I'm so much at the point, like, I don't need the term anymore if the term is too triggering for people. I realize that I'm lucky. And so if it, yeah, if it's so hard for other people, fine. Like, we can get a new term. But if there's, if it's worth saving, and if it's helpful to save it, then, like, then let's start. Let's get at it. Because I think there are enough of us out there that want to, that are thinking hard about it, who feel bummed out that we don't have this community anymore that we can really, you know, like, I still felt like we were wandering around. Like, there's, it feels lonely. Even, like, when you reached out, like, we haven't talked in ages, decades, you know, but, like, as soon as you reached out, I'm like, I can hang with them. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah, totally. I felt already so, like, known and seen, and just been like, yeah, we probably have a great time. Like, we could probably talk about work. We probably, you know, just, like, immediately felt safe. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, we'd probably be friends. Like, if we live in the same city.
Yeah.
That's so totally nice. Because then you're like, you start putting together your little community and you're feeling that sense of belonging again. And you're like, oh, there are people out there. And, like, man, is it really nice when you find someone at a dinner party who, like, was raised kind of like you and has that faith and, like, can get you like that. Because not a lot of people can. And it was so significant. It was such a big part of our lives that it, you know, it feels weird to, like, date and not have a person who's, like, come from that background. Some ways it's, like, awesome because I don't want to have to engage with it. And other ways I'm just like, oh, like, I wish I could just, like, say some things or, like, bring up Awana or bring up YWAM and it not just totally weird you out.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, it has made me process more, so.
Right.
I mean, Kristen and I grew up both in Linden, though she had a much different, like, childhood growing up, like, not in the church and all of that. So that is different. But at the same time, like, in our teenage and adult life, we did together and we've just got to process it together. So that kind of, like, brings me back to, like, we are currently creating a culture.
Yeah.
And I think we have our own culture. It's totally different than, like, what we youth group and what our life was like 15 years ago. We were part of a totally different culture, and that culture is the one that is going out. But I feel the same way that you do, where it's like, I would like that to not be a bad thing. I want more people like you and I to have conversations of, like, how can we support our, like, the older generation who made us who we are and not just crap all over everything that they did and make them feel terrible and make them put walls up and make them fight to the death, because they will. Like, this is they are a generation that will not just stand by. Yes, they're proud, they're strong, they're feisty. Like, I mean, like, your dad was... He literally would just some Sundays just be yelling about how horrible we were in such a good way, in such a great, it was fantastic. But, like, if we don't have the insight to realize what's happening, because it's currently happening. So most people, I don't think our age realizes that we are creating culture. It's coming. We will be the birth of this new culture, which is also, it's because of the death of a different culture.
Sure.
And there's an opportunity to have it be more of a handoff and have some legacy, and but in a good way. But it's going to be really hard if we kind of get too narrow-sided and we don't give any credit to the good that came out of like evangelical. And but it's going to be so hard because so many people our age are leaving the church and were so hurt by the church. It was so damaging that it's literally like triggering, and we have just mass amounts of people our age going to therapy because of church. And then that makes other people question, like, how, if that mess is coming out of that, like, what? And same as you, like, I had such a positive experience in the church, and like, and I also just never had the expectations of that it should be perfect. I never thought that it, that was just never in my mind, where I think a lot of people kind of come into it thinking like, oh, that wasn't what I expected. I'm like, yeah, they totally screwed that up. Like, that was a really horrible thing that my church just did. I didn't think that represented it. I'm just like, we're people. Like, this is an organization. Like, it's more than those little messes and those little things and the screw-ups and whatnot. And so, but now it's like, how do we like help support like what we're being birthed out of, and how do we tailor a culture that is better?
Yeah.
That is something that, you know, your dad and my dad and like other people that grew up will look at us when they're like on their deathbed and just be like so proud. And it doesn't, not because it looks like what they were building or what they were a part of, but they're just so proud of the direction. Not that we need that, but I'm just, it.
How cool would it be?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do think, because it's like, we're not trying to swing so hard the other way that we make, you know, like mistakes on the other side of the pendulum. Like, we do recognize that hearing from them and having their correction and their wisdom and their mentorship, like, would help us shape this new culture in a way that's really meaningful. And also, like, I want to support your legacy too. So like, please, like, be with me in this. Like, I'm going to be living through it more, but I want your experiences imbued in it. I want that to impact the, you know, the decisions and the way that this looks like. And yeah, that is like meaningful and important and necessary if we're going to do it and do something that's really good and create something, a new culture that is really valuable. We need that insight. And I like, that's why it's worth having these conversations, because it's not just politics, but politics is just like the hot key topic in the arena in which we're like fighting and figuring it out together. So it's like the first thing that we're really engaging in this tension and this recreation with. And if we can figure out how to do it with politics and face these awkward, ugly conversations, then we'll have a chance that we can start like translating it and figuring it out for the rest of our life, and in like what and how we define family, you know, and how we define success and power and you know, opportunities and equality for all, you know. It's like starting here, but like it's only because we need to get to all these other places, and we need to practice it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, sweet. Now that we fixed everything about the evangelical world and America and politics,
that's it.
I guess we can just be done.
The scary part now is that I feel like responsible to do something. I mean, the last 4 years I've just been like cruising on the outside going like, that's messed up. I'm glad I'm not in it. Like, I'm happy over here. But now after I started, you know, like working with New More Majority, doing Operation Family Meeting, people are like, oh, so you're pretty religious. And I was like, honestly, I haven't really given this like a ton of thought. I've just been happy to put it in the corner. I mean, like, I have, obviously it's like the sad burden on my heart forever. But like, as far as like having the energy to engage, like, I've really just been like trying to build a career, build a life, you know, just like do everything and not this. And so now I'm like, oh shoot. Like, and in the same way of like how my dad has felt called and felt like the Holy Spirit's talking to him, I'm like, if I like take a moment with my aromatherapy and my Himalayan salt lamp and I like listen, like, am I feeling called? Because, like, you know, I haven't said that word in like a long time, but it's like, yeah, I do feel uniquely called to like, to, you know, be a voice in this, only because like I care about us. I care about like my friends and those of us who are wanting these things. I'm like, all right, if it means me going back in and like having conversations and facing some of these fears and like figuring out my faith, if it means like my friends who are gay can like feel a little more encouraged and less alone and having conversations with their parents, then like that's worth it for me. And maybe that's some weird manipulation of my personality or hero complex, but like whatever works.
Yeah.
Like I want to help, and it means a lot. And it means a lot when people reach out and say like, thanks for just sharing. Like, I love my parents. I miss them. I love my Christian community. I miss them. I don't want to feel this way. Like, how do I start talking to them again? How do I get through my pain? How do I start the conversation? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, I get to build my own relationship with my parents. So it feels like not really losing anything here. I'm figuring out my background. I'm developing my own faith. And I'm like helping people do the same, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
It's great.
I think we just need more people. Anytime I see people stepping out like you did, I gravitate to that so instantaneously because I believe so strongly that like that's all we need. We're so afraid to be ourselves.
Yeah, like
everything about everything makes us desperately run away from being who we are to survive. Survival means don't be yourself. And so anytime somebody does, and it's scary. I'm sure when you first started posting any of this, it's like sweaty palms and like yeah. Oh man, what's Susan going to say to me now put myself? Maybe at first, and maybe some people will never get there, but if you're really truly just stepping into being yourself, and there's all the Christian-y words, but like, maybe we don't totally understand these like spiritual things that we were taught, but like our calling and all these big, big picture things that were kind of taught like we had the exact answer, which now I'm realizing like, we don't know, but that does not make me not believe that there are some magical powers going on of the almighty God who created everything. I'm sure he can do some of these things that you're talking about. Do you exactly know how that functions? And if you say this, that, and do this, it will just pew and do exactly what you think? Maybe not. But let's not just disregard it. Like, you were made to be who you are. And if we're just talking about a basic level, and if we can get more people to like step into the like, I don't know all the answers. I don't know what that means. I feel this way. I see these things happening and I'm gravitating towards this. And this is how I'm feeling. All of a sudden, all these other people are like, whoa, hey. And they're just like desperately reaching because they can see themselves in you just because you're being yourself. Because finally, you don't look like everybody else. We all just look exactly the same. The second somebody does something, like we're all just like, whoa, holy crap. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean for me? If she can do it, then I could probably do it. And if we all started doing it and we all started engaging into the conversations and really, it really comes down to just being okay with being super vulnerable is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's being okay just being like, all right, here it is. Do you want it? Or you don't want it. I mean, but I'm going to do it anyway because for me, like, time is going. I cannot do anything about it. It is ticking. And I don't want to be on my deathbed or just randomly die and have to be like, well, frick. What? Why did I give into such status quo? Why did I give into basically living a life for others when it's like we can step into our like who we were made to be, and that actually is what will help bring other people to having fulfillment in their life and to having deeper relationships with the people that you have relationships with, and like with our parents, and navigating these really difficult subjects and like culture clashes and politics and all of these things. It will only have the opportunity to deepen every aspect of all of those things. So that's a long way of saying, please continue doing what you're doing and sharing what's on your heart. And like, it really does matter. And it really has a ripple effect on other people's lives.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. It is awesome, super meaningful to hear.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I mean, literally what you said earlier of like how right when I reach out to you and you're like, oh yeah, I could probably like get along with these people. We probably hang out. And yeah. it's like, it's so crazy because like how we grew up, where we grew up and the church that, and all those things, like even though, yeah, like we probably haven't seen or spoke to each other in a decade, but it's like, there is so much common ground for us that I also kind of feel like I know where you're at and like the, yeah.
how you're going through.
So you being like, oh, I really appreciate that. I'm like, I've had someone say this to me and it felt so good. it's crazy.
Yeah, it does seem a lot. Which, if I can plug it all, so for Operation Family Meeting, that's like our campaign, and right now with New More Majority, the religion pack for the election time, which is awesome. And we had a petition go out, like asking people like you and me who grew up in the church to talk to Christian loved ones. And like, we provide a ton of resources for them and like a guidebook on how to have conversations. And then like Liza and I model with mom and dad how to have these conversations. And we post those videos. That's been great. And the next kind of thing, as we've like heard from people, we really want to like collect stories and experiences and start like just getting information, because like you mentioned, we are forming a new culture and we're at this critical point of like, how does our faith inform our politics, and like how do we define evangelicalism, and like, what kind of faith does this generation want? And so, you know, so we want people to reach out. We want people to be willing to share their stories with us, even if it's just like, tell me a bit about your experience, like how you were in the church, maybe aren't in the church, and you're like what you're trying to figure out now, whether or not. It just felt like a lot of us started to find our voice because of Trump and have that boldness and confidence to start saying something. But it was already there. That was just like an instigating factor or scenario that let us like kind of rise up and be like, whoa, 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 not any longer, guys. Yeah, if anybody can go to New More Majority and support Operation Family Meeting, we'd love to reach out and then just like start getting some serious data on us. Like, that's how we do, you know? We just like, we need to collect that data of like, so that we can understand, like, how do we relate to each other? How do we like resonate with one another about where our faith is at? Because I think it's a big thing that we're just starting to have the energy to think about again. And I think maybe that's a big thing for us. We're like, things are not so crazy. Maybe we have a job. Maybe we have a steady family. It's like, all right, I actually have some bandwidth or a real longing to like look back at my childhood faith and start creating an adult faith, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Okay, so what should people do? Go to a website or go to Instagram or where?
They can go to newmoralmajority.org. And they look up Operation Family Meeting, or they can go to my Instagram, Ryan, and all the information is there. And just sign the petition. That'll get we'll get your email that way. Then we can send out a ton of like this resource about how to have a good conversation. You can like check our YouTube videos out, our Operation Family Meetings with my family, and then just get connected with me and with New More Majority and with Liza, and just not feel alone anymore. You know, be with other people who get you.
Yes. That's awesome. Sweet.
This is great. This was awesome. Thanks for doing this. I'm super excited to have people like you that are the thing. Like, I just don't like politics. But like you were saying, sorry, as we're wrapping the conversation, I'm just like jumping back and you're supposed to be gone like 20 minutes ago. I'll try to say this quickly. It's just like, it doesn't ever seem to be productive in bringing people together. So I've just stayed away from it. Actually, it's very similar to like being a Christian. I don't sing to the choir. That makes no sense to me to just project onto people who already believe what I believe. And in fact, the thing that I believe is to be with people who don't believe what I believe. And it's like, and just be a person and like love them and stuff like that. And so like religion and politics have both kind of basically been in the same. It's like my life should show people what I believe. I don't need to spew out all the things that I think. However, with that said, there was like a tipping point with Trump more recently, and it was just like, okay, like, no, we need to have conversations. And then like seeing the response and being like, what? I didn't even know you felt that way or thought that. Like that's the opposite of what I believe and think. But I thought we kind of thought the same thing. And then it's like, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper and more and more and more like, oh, so we're like way different on these thoughts. And so trying to figure out what all that means. But it's gotten to that point where it's like, no, it's no longer like okay to just like not have conversations. I don't think everybody needs to get on a podcast and like talk about it in public, but it's like, it's gotten to the point where like people like us do need to talk about it so that we in our age group and how we're feeling can be like, oh my gosh, there's other people that feel this way. But then we also need to be talking and educating and bringing together of like, how do we talk to our parents? How do we talk to these other people? Like, because we want relationships with them. We want to like show them like, hey, we think you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, how do I love, respect, and desire a relationship with you? And like, kind of be like, yo, like, this is why I think that's wrong for the first time. And I've never cared about politics and stuff before. But now it's like, all of a sudden I'm trying to care because it's like, it kind of actually is mattering now. And I guess it kind of always had, but I just didn't have to know it because I'm a white male who grew up in America. So it was pretty easy for me to not have to know any of these things.
Same.
It's pretty great. It's pretty awesome. And so this was the first time where it's like, whoa, it's not so awesome for a lot of people, but we say it's awesome.
Yeah. And so anyways, I know you need to leave. I think this was super great.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have another, like a follow-up, like after the election.
Yeah. Post-election, yeah, exactly.
Post-election, that would be kind of cool.
Like, okay, what's going to happen? Well, what do we do, guys? Like, who knows? But we're going to have to do something either out of the direction. We'll just like, this is like set the stage and then we'll come back. Yeah.
Let's do it.
So that we're all lost.
Yeah, exactly. This will be like a quarterly like get-together that we do.
Oh, we do. Touch and base, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. How's everybody doing? Good.
Okay. Not so good. Awesome. We could do like take phone calls in. Like, all right, we've got Jimmy from Colorado. How are you doing? Oh, having a hard time talking to your dad. Okay.
Yeah. How was Thanksgiving? Oh my God. Phone call in post Thanksgiving holiday time. Like, tell us your horror stories. It's okay. We're here for you.
Oh my gosh. This is a show I would listen to.
And love to listen to the people calling in.
Yeah, we've got some weird experiences. Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much. Real.
Love to Kristen and your kids.
Yeah. Have a good rest of your day.
I'll talk soon.
Later.
Thanks.